I think it definitely means a lot. But at the same time, I feel like it's just another game. Just, it's a new focus now, being in the situation we are in now. But so, as leaders on the team, we just got to refocus the guys and be competitive throughout the week, get everyone locked in and focused, and go out and get a win. And I'm sure it means a lot going up against his mentor and previous team and all that. But at the end of the game, we're trying to, at the end of the day, we're trying to win the ball game.
Mitchell Trubisky, welcome back in 720 WGN. Mark Harmon with you till 7:30 tonight. Blackhawks hockey coming on up here. The Hawks are on the road at Colorado, and Chris Bowden will have your pregame show at that point. Jim Rebant is retiring. The Bears public address announcer, he's coming up, as is Joey Meyer, who will be on the call with Dave Bennett tonight. Wildcats and the DePaul Blue Demons. The Cats have won the last four. And Adam Ho is going to talk some Bears football with me. But I'd like to discuss it with you right now. The phone number is 312-981-7200. And we all know, right? Disappointing season for the Chicago Bears. Super Bowl was the goal. Playoffs were almost considered a guarantee. None of it happened. Two games to go. The Bears sitting at 7-7, and they're eliminated. With a ton of questions. Is Trubisky ever going to really figure it out? Can the defense get back to being elite? Should Matt Nagy give up the play calling? Are we ever, ever, ever going to see a Super Bowl champion in this city again? 1985 still sitting out there. Hamp will be in Cows, by the way, tomorrow, 5-7, the pregame show, and then postgame after the game till midnight tomorrow night. But you have an opportunity, right, to play these last two games against two teams that are in all likelihood, well, the Chiefs for sure, and then the Vikings are in all likelihood going to be in the playoffs here. Vikings may end up winning the division. You're playing against two teams that you can really measure yourself up to, up against, and perhaps gain some confidence going into the offseason. And you're sitting at 7-7. And maybe it'd be nice to see Mitchell Trubisky play well here in the last two games and let him feel like he's on solid ground going into the offseason. So, if you're going out to Soldier Field tomorrow night or watching it at home, however you're going to consume the Bears game, or even not watching it, and just we'll check the score the next day in the paper. Listen to Dave End in the morning on 720 WGN. That's how you'll find out. Simple question for you. Do you want the Bears to win the football game? Now, that seems like an easy question. You're a Bears fan. You want them to win, right? But here's the deal. As I did this thing called math, you look at the NFL right now, look at the standings, and draft picks 1 through 12 are pretty much locked in. The Dolphins, the Bengals, the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Broncos, the Chargers, the New York Giants, the Washington Redskins, both 3-11, the Detroit Lions, 3-10, the Falcons and Panthers are 5-9, and the Arizona Cardinals are 4-9-1. So 1 through 12 is pretty much decided. But 13 through 22 is not. The 8-6 Steelers, the 6-8 Browns, the 8-6 Titans, the 7-8 Bucks, 7-7 Eagles, 7-7 Cowboys, 7-7 Chicago Bears. So wouldn't it be better for the Bears to go out and come close, play well, but yet come up a little bit short? So I was looking through Bears history, though, and thinking, like, what would it actually mean in terms of the history of this beloved franchise if they were able to finish 9-7, be above 500 after going 12-4 last year. 12-4, lost in the wild card game at home to the Eagles in a game they should have won, Cody Parkey double doink. The last time, amazingly, that the Bears had two seasons in a row where they were over 500, 8-8 doesn't count, you got to be over 500. You got to go back to 06 when they went to the Super Bowl and lost to Peyton Manning, and 05 when they went 11-5. They were 13-3 in 06, 11-5 in 05. From there, you got to go back. That's the only time they did it with Lovie Smith. They did it one time, back-to-back seasons, over 500. Mark Trestman had one 500 season, then he was 5-11. He was 8-8, never over 500. John Fox didn't sniff 500. 6-10, 3-13, 5-11. Dick Geron, one season, 2001, when they went 13-3. Every other year at Dick Geron, they were under 500. 6-10, 5-11, 4-12, 7-9. See you later. Dave Wannstedt was the last Bears coach to get it done. In 95, they went 9-7, missed the playoffs. And in 94, they went to the playoffs, won a wild card game, and lost in the divisional round. Dave Wannstedt, 1994. So since 94, it's happened two times that the Bears have actually had back-to-back seasons over 500. So it kind of means something to be stringing a couple years together and to actually be able to go for three in a row next year. Like, I can see Adam Hoge writing that piece. When's the last time the Bears had three straight years when they were 3 years in a row over 500? Well, of course, now we're talking the Super Bowl team. And that was when they did it 5 years in a row. 10-6 in 84. Lost in the playoffs, beat the Redskins, lost to the Niners. And then 85, win the Super Bowl, 15-1. 86, 14-2. 11-4 in 87. And 12-4 in 88, 5 years in a row. So if they actually were to win the last two games, which I don't think they're going to do, but if they did, that'd be the first time they'd have an opportunity for the first time since the 84-88 stretch for 3 years in a row where they're over 500. Now think about that, by the way, in terms of NFL franchises and how much success the Green Bay Packers have had and the New England Patriots and so many other teams that are consistently super competitive. I mean, if you're upper management of the Chicago Bears, if you're Virginia sitting there in your suite and you look at those numbers and you think, you know, we've only gone back-to-back winning seasons twice since 1994. I've been sitting in here watching over this franchise with all the love. I mean, that's just amazing. Sustained success. Zippo. So question for you, 312-981-7200. Do you want the Bears to beat the Kansas City Chiefs tomorrow and then go on and beat the Minnesota Vikings just for the history of back-to-back winning seasons? Or lose and pick somewhere around 13, 14, 15 and not down at 21, 22, 23. 720 WGN. 720 WGN. Okay, here. One thing that I failed to point out in my hot take on the Bears drafting. The Bears do not have a first-round pick this year because they traded Khalil Mack. But it impacts every single round is the point that I'm getting at. If you're drafting later in the second round, they've got two second-round picks. They have a couple of picks in the sixth round. They are without their third and fourth-round picks because of Khalil Mack and David Montgomery as well. So it's going to impact their draft in theory later in the rounds. Now it would be a lot more impactful if it was a first-round pick. This is true. But all of this is playing into, do you, I'm curious if people are sitting there really, as the season is over, like, what do you want to see? Do you want to actually win games right now? Does it matter to you? And it will impact their draft position in the 2020 draft. Let me get Dan in Woodstock here on 720 WGN. What's up, Dan? Welcome to WGN.
Thanks for taking my call. You already covered what I was going to say. They lost the first-round pick with the Mac trade. I'm okay with that. Second, third, fourth rounds, it's a little bit of a crapshoot. You move down a couple spots, not a big deal. At this point, just keep on. Maybe you can get through the coach's thick head about how to properly use Mitch instead of trying to make him work his system. Work a system that's going to make Mitch succeed and make the Bears succeed. Keep the defense off the field for a little bit.
Well, so that
I just want to see constant improvement.
So that's the question there, Dan, that you're teeing up, and we're going to have Adam Hoge coming up after 5:30. What do you want to see as far as Matt Nagy and Mitchell Trubisky and how they're partnering? to give you confidence going into 2020, right, that these two are on the same page and they're actually not just running Nagy's offense, but they're running an offense that fits Mitchell Trubisky. I mean, I think that's a huge part of why the season has gone sideways. The offense had zero creativity and did not underline Trubisky's strengths. They should have. It's amazing that at least for a good portion of the season they went backwards, right?
I agree 100%. But the thing is, Nagy's in year two of a 5-year contract. They're not going to pay him 3 years to not coach the Bears. People need to realize he's going to be the coach.
Yeah, but
if that's the case, go ahead.
No,
I'm
I was going to say you're John. It's Dan. It's your show too. When you're on it, my friend. God bless you. We're all in this together, and we're having right. Bears conversation. I'm just wondering from your standpoint as a Bears fan, Dan, do you have confidence in the coach regardless of the contract? Like, I understand he's not going anywhere, but do you believe in him?
Right now, I got to say no because he's not evaluating. He's not between him and the GM who can't. I'm concerned the GM watched the Division III championship last night, looking for a tight end to draft from either North Central College or. Wisconsin Whitewater.
Well, maybe he was. Maybe they'll find the next Adam Sheen there. Dan, appreciate the call, man.
Great. Thanks a lot. Take care. Bye-bye.
You got it. 312-981-7200. You know, it's funny when you're talking about tight ends. I'm going back through the drafts and the year that Travis Kelce, by the way, who's rolling in here with the Chiefs tomorrow night, that year, Bears picking John Bostic. Kelce didn't go. I think it was the third round. Maybe it was the fourth round. Same year Zach Ertz is going. There's a reason when you don't have sustained success, and a huge part of that reason is in the draft. Let me get John in Plainfield on 720 WGN, 312-981-7200. Go ahead, John.
Hey, Carm. You know, the thing that keeps sticking in my craw is, okay, he doesn't play the starters in the preseason.
Right.
These last two games count even less. If you're considering possible injuries, or let's roll out Tyler Bray. Is he still on the team?
We could do that with a lot of the draft picks, John. A lot of swings and misses. I mean,
if you
want to play that game, we certainly can do it. It's not just the draft picks that they missed on, though. To me, look, you can miss in the fifth round, the third round, the sixth round, whatever. I don't care. You can't miss on the quarterback, man. Not when you're picking number three overall. Not when you've got two guys who very well may end up in the Hall of Fame sitting there. You can't pick the guy that started 13 games at North Carolina, bet on him, and be wrong. That's just that's rough. Beyond rough.
True.
Now, all right, John, appreciate you, man.
Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah, 312-981-7200. Let's do a quick exercise here. Chicago Bears drafts. Let's prepare for some pain. Let's just get ready to feel the nauseousness of what's gone on. Because it is just massively disappointing. All right, this year, David Montgomery. Okay. Bears offensive line hasn't been good. Bears didn't have a pick into the third round. They needed a running back, I guess, although I would argue that they would have gotten the same exact production from Jordan Howard, but for whatever reason, he wasn't good enough for the Bears despite his production, so he went and drafted David Montgomery. Book still out on him. Riley Ridley in the fourth round. You know, there's this guy down in Jacksonville who Ryan Pace, Matt Nagy, have both said they, or at least Matt Nagy has said, we haven't heard from Pace in forever, and he's not going to talk till after the year. But Matt Nagy has said, yeah, we liked Gardner Minshew. We liked him a lot. But yet you don't draft a quarterback, and you stick with Chase Daniels, and you pick a guy like Riley Ridley in the fourth round, Duke Shelley in the sixth round, Gardner Minshew went in the sixth round, and then whoever you got in the seventh round, Kareth White, Stephen Denmark, don't know. In essence, is why you're sitting where you're at. Imagine if you had drafted Gardner Minshew. Trubisky gets hurt, separates his shoulder, misses a couple games. Maybe this guy steps in, he plays great. Maybe your season doesn't go sideways at that point. Maybe you have a huge option who you don't have to pay a ton of dough to. Everyone's talking about what to do in the offseason with the quarterback. The Bears are not going to go out and pay a ton of money for a quarterback to bring him in here and have him compete with Mitchell Trubisky. It would make no sense. They're going to have to draft him. We'll talk about this with Adam Hoge, but they good organizations, they draft a quarterback every year, and the really good ones, they find one, like Tom Brady in the sixth round, that type of thing. Roquan Smith, okay, good pick in the first round in 2018. James Daniels, decent pick in the second round. Anthony Miller, okay. Hamp would disagree, but that's fine. Having a mostly productive season. So that's three picks in 2018 where they did all right, one in the first round and then two in the second round. Fourth, fifth, sixth, and seventh round, swing and a miss. Javon Wims has been okay. But so you go back to 2017, Mitchell Trubisky. That's an F. I'm not saying that he can't be a competent quarterback, but considering who was there, that's an F. Adam Shaheen, swing and a miss, F. Eddie Jackson, good pick. Tariq Cohen, good pick. Jordan Morgan, no. So, and then you keep going back. Leonard Floyd, he's okay. But number nine overall, not good enough. Cody Whitehair's been a good pick in the second round. And Nick Kwiatkowski was a good pick that year in the fourth round. Jordan Howard was a good pick in the fifth round, but for whatever reason, he didn't fit into Matt Nagy's system, so he's gone. And then you have Kevin White as a first-round pick in 2015. Rough way to start. Eddie Golden was decent. Kersu was terrible. Langford never did anything. Adrian Amos was a nice player, but now he's playing for the Packers. Bottom line is that Ryan Pace's draft history is very checkered. But he's going nowhere. He'll be here, and he'll have an opportunity to hopefully make the Bears better in the offseason. All right, Adam Hoge's coming up, 720 WGN. Some breaking news from baseball. Welcome back in here, 720 WGN. It's just crossing the AP wire. Handed to me by David Jennings. Thank you, David Jennings. Adam Hoge coming up to continue our Bears conversation in a second here. But it says here, computer plate umpires could be called up, congratulations to them, to the major leagues at some point during the next five seasons. So sometime in the next 5 years, a computer that's doing work down at AA may get the call. Umpires agreed to cooperate with Major League Baseball in the development and testing of an automated ball strike system as part of a 5-year labor contract announced today. Two people talking to the AP are confirming. The Major League Baseball Umpires Association also agreed to cooperate and assist if Commissioner Rob Manfred decides to utilize the system at the Major League level. The Independent Atlantic League and Arizona Fall League are experimenting, or have experimented with it last year. A lot of people want this. Let's get the call right? And I'm a big tennis fan. Arguing in tennis has gone out the window. You know why? Because if you don't like the call, you point at the screen and they do a replay on where the ball landed. It's quick, it's easy, it moves things along. It takes some of the theatrics out of the game, and the human element sort of goes away, but I'm all for it. Give me an umpire behind home plate. Let's get an accurate strike call. It'll change things for the players too, though, right? If you're a catcher, he's great at framing. Well, framing won't matter anymore. It's either a strike or it's not. I don't care if you can bring the ball back in or all that type of stuff. So it will change the game in some ways, but on the table here for robot umpires behind home plate for your baseball. All right, back to the NFL and back to the Bears, and let me bring in Adam Hoge here. Hoge, we were just talking about Mitchell Trubisky and what it would look like if the Bears go out in the offseason to try to bring in at least some competition for him. But then you look at it like Jameis Winston with the Bucks, who lost to the Texans today. The Bucks are going to either franchise him or bring him back in some way, shape, or form. A lot of other guys out there, the names, they're going to be expensive. So I don't think we're going to see anything different other than having maybe you might even have Chase Daniel back here next year.
Yeah, I mean, this is really hard to handicap right now because you also have this sort of weird thing that no one wants to talk about, in that Tom Brady's contract is up and Philip Rivers' contract is up, and Drew Brees is too, I believe. So, yep. I mean, I don't expect those guys to necessarily go anywhere.
but why are they not under contract? You know what I mean? It wouldn't be terribly surprising to see one of those guys that have been in their spot for so long end up somewhere else. And if that happens, then the whole thing can kind of get shaken up. And so if you're a team like the Bears that are in the somewhat awkward spot where, you know, no one's going to blame you if you're going to, you know, hedge your bets and try to bring in a second option, yet you're not really, I wouldn't consider the Bears, you know, one of the teams that are desperate need of a quarterback. Those are the teams that end up overpaying. It's just, it's hard to believe right now that the Bears are going to go out and spend a lot of money or pull off some kind of, you know, huge trade. They're going to remain committed to Mitch Trubisky. That's why, you know, I remain so steadfast that he's going to be starting week one of next season. Now, a couple things I don't know. I'm not entirely sure where Mariota is going to come in the market. And that's an interesting name because, A, Ryan Pace really liked him coming out of college. B, if Mark Helfrich is still on the staff, he coached him in college. There are some things there within the system that I think fit Mariota. And then there's also another awkward reality of that in that he has the same agency as Mitch Trubisky. So do you want two of clients competing against each other on the same team? But that's why this whole thing is so muddy and really hard to predict right now. I don't hate the Mariota option. The other option I don't hate at all is if Alex Smith is able to play again, because he knows this system. Nagy loves him as a person, and that's a big fit. But I don't know. I saw Alex Smith in person walking around in Washington before the Bears played the Redskins earlier this season, and that dude was still limping. He didn't look like a guy that was going to be playing football again. So I still feel like that's a long shot, even though it makes a lot of sense as a potential fit.
Alex Smith's a great dude. He would fit in here personality-wise 100%. I don't know about the health. Hearing you say that's like, yeah, I don't know. But that would be a guy to take a flyer on, and maybe you draft a quarterback. I think you just draft a quarterback. Find yourself a Gardner Minshew who you like, and hey, if things go sideways or if Mitch gets hurt, we're going to turn it to this guy. That's what I would try to do if I were them. Who do you like in the third, fourth, fifth round? I know they don't have all their picks this year, but that's what I would try to do.
So I also like that, Carm. Although you do, the two negatives are you do have a limited amount of picks, and then the other thing is you know how the city is. The first bad game Trubisky has next season, it's going to be throw that guy in there. And that's not necessarily something that you should worry about, especially when you constantly insist that you're blocking out the outside noise. But it does create a different dynamic that right now Trubisky doesn't have, and that clearly the job is his. But maybe that's something he needs. Maybe that's something that pushes him.
There was one comment that I read this week that Mitch said, quote, "It's the nature of the beast." When you're talking about bringing in somebody else, and this is not quite the same, but it's in the same family, if you will. The nature of the beast, but I'm in competition with myself. He's talking about competing. He's talking about how he's connected to Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. I'm in competition with myself, trying to be the best version of me and win games for the Bears. I like all those words, Mitchell Trubisky. You're right about that. And it's something that I can't control. But two good guys to be compared to, this is where I go sideways, hopefully we'll keep getting better and help the league. Dude, you're not being compared to them for performance. You're just being compared to them because you got drafted with them. The same way Ryan Leaf is compared to Peyton Manning or Sam Bowie is compared to Jordan. It's just, you're not really being compared to them, dude. I mean, come on, man. There's interesting ones where you could, like, well, let's compare Jared Goff and Carson Wentz or Winston and Mariota even. Andrew Luck and RG3, how that went. But, like, you're not really being compared to them, dude. You're just sort of weirdly in the conversation. I mean, there is no comparison at this point. But we talked too much about Trubisky today. I blame myself. But I actually think he's getting better, Adam. I don't know if you agree, but I think in the last 5 weeks or so, the dude has taken a step forward.
Well, the guy in the last six games has been a guy that you can live with as your starting quarterback in the NFL. Now, He's still not the number two overall pick franchise savior that you wanted, but he has been improving. If he had played like this all season, this whole conversation wouldn't be what it is right now.
Right.
It would still be, oh, he's not Mahomes because the Bears are playing Mahomes this week, but it wouldn't be where so much, so many people in Chicago are just kind of ready to move on already. So that's why, if he finishes his last two games strong and puts up a good performance against Mahomes, that's a half of the season. Now, you want him to be better than half of the season, but it is the last half. And you do have to remember he did get hurt in the first half of the season. And clearly, I hate to bring this up like it's defending him, but it's not just him. It was so obvious week one against the Packers that defenses had caught on to this offense, that they were ready for what Nagy was bringing out, and they took so long to adjust and find any kind of an identity. And yes, part of that was on Trubisky, but a lot of it was on the system and on the coaching, that it can't all just be put on number 10. And that's why I could totally see a scenario where this offseason they regroup, Nagy goes back to the drawing table, figures out what works, and all of a sudden the Bears are the team, next year that, has new stuff that teams are kind of struggling to adapt to as they go through their schedule. It'll also be an easier schedule. Trubisky finishes the season strong. This whole thing could look better next year. Obviously, it'd be a stretch right now to ever say Trubisky's going to be what Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson have turned into, but he still could definitely be a quarterback you win with and occasionally win because of, which that's still worth a lot of money in the NFL.
All right, wrapping up here. Do you know that the Bears are actually shooting for history in the last two games here? How many times, Adam Hogue, in the last 26 years have the Bears had back-to-back seasons where they were over 500? Have you looked at this?
Wow. I haven't, but back-to-back seasons over 500.
Yes. How many times do you think that's happened in the last 26 years?
Well, I think it happened at least twice under Lovey. Is that correct?
It happened once under Lovey.
Okay. Wow. So, once?
Twice. 05, okay. 06. 05, they lost to the divisional playoffs to Carolina, and then they went to the Super Bowl in 06. And then 94 and 95. They made the playoffs in 94, and then they went 9-7 in 95. That's it. When I was just looking at that today, so I'm doing my research, I'm like, that is legit beyond pathetic. Like, how do you sit there as a, upper management of the Bears? You know how many times we've gone back-to-back 500? I'm not talking about even back-to-back in the playoffs. I'm not talking about back-to-back to the NFC championship game. Back-to-back 500. That's terrible.
Yeah, it's not good.
Hot take from Carm right here. That is not good, but kind of amazing just to name.
You think about that same time period, how many good defenses they've had in that time period too.
Yeah.
And it's just the one thing I'll never, ever, ever blame Bears fans for is just sort of this woe is me mentality, like always expecting the worst, because you've just been teased so much. You've had all these good defenses, and if just one year you could combine that with a halfway decent offense, you're going to have success. And we saw that the year they went to the Super Bowl. It was an average to above-average offense with a great defense, and they went all the way to the Super Bowl. They had that again when they lost to the Packers in the NFC title game, and Cutler gets hurt in that game. Otherwise, that could have been different. And then last year, and last year's offense was far from perfect, but they had at least enough okay performances to win 12 games before losing in the playoffs. And that, again, that goes back to my expectations for this season. I really thought at a minimum this offense should be halfway decent, and with the defense, they were going to be really good. And obviously the offense is the complete opposite, and it's just not been good enough this season.
Yeah. We'll talk to you tomorrow, my friend. What time are you coming on? Do you know? Is that the field?
I haven't been told yet, but whenever you guys want me, I'll be there at Soldier Field. And it could either be a really tough night for Bears fans to watch, or hey, you never know. Maybe they pull off a miracle.
I think they're going to play well. All right. I'm guessing that Rick Geezer has you slated for 6:05, so I'll just say listen to for Hogue tomorrow at 6:05.
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, Adam. Appreciate you.
All right. See you, Carm.
Adam Hogue, 720 WGN.
The comparisons are out there, and they're never going to stop. Kind of me, Pat, and Deshaun are kind of all grouped together because we're in the same draft class, drafted in the first round and all that. But there's no do-overs. We are where we are. Our careers are going in different paths, and they will for the rest of the time, and they're always going to be compared against each other. So it's just kind of just the nature of the beast. But I'm in competition with myself, just trying to be the best version of me, go out there and win games for the Chicago Bears. And it's just something that I can't control. And it is what it is, but two good guys to be in comparison with, and just competing with, and hopefully we just keep getting better. And hopefully
that is the quarterback Mitchell Trubisky saying everything right there, minus just that last little part, which I shouldn't be picking at, but just pointing it out. It's really actually not a good thing that you're compared with that. You could have been in like the Blake Bortles draft. You could have been in there with Johnny Manziel. That would have been a sweet draft. You'd be looking great. The Bears picked the best quarterback in the draft. See how much better he is than Bortles. Or the conversation would probably be, he's better than Bortles. I mean, who else were they going to pick? Unfortunately for the Bears and Trubisky, that there was these other two guys who look like they're going to the Hall of Fame. I'm Mark Carman with you here on 720 WGN. Good to have you. Joey Meyer is coming up. Wildcats and DePaul. I love talking to Coach Joey and do a little history, get some Ray Meyer talk on the air here. And Jim Rebant is going to do his last game as the Bears public address announcer. He's been doing it as a part-time guy starting all the way back in the late 70s and then full-time from the early 80s on, and just the voice of Soldier Field, right? There's a timeout. Where? On the field. And a million other signature Jim Rebant moments. I've always appreciated him, so we'll play a little snippet of our conversation with Jim coming up here as well. I do want to give some love to North Central College. Now, I didn't know a whole lot about North Central College, probably like the rest of you, until the last couple of days. But there they were, representing all of us. I think like literally everyone's jumped on, right? North Central, way to go Cardinals. You guys are awesome. Division III, National Championship, Stag Bowl 38. Am I reading my Roman numerals correctly here? They get it done. They whipped Wisconsin Whitewater by a score of 41-14. And just a cool story, right? Here these guys are. They're not on scholarship. Ethan Greenfield running wild, 138 yards, three touchdowns. I'm sure Ryan Pace is paying attention maybe to Greenfield. Brock Rutter threw for 263 yards, couple of touchdowns in the win. And I just the thing I like most about the story, as we get to learn it here, is that their head coach, Jeff Thorne, his father was the head coach there, and here he succeeds his dad, and then Thorne's son is playing at Michigan State. So State's playing in a bowl game, but he was able to get away from Michigan State to go watch the game, go down to Dallas, see it, and so this you got the family, right? You got the dad who coached it, this passed it on to his son, and now the oldest dad onto his grandson, who was there playing for Michigan State. If all that makes sense, here's the youngest.
We had the perfect little window of time off, so I'm going to leave here on Thursday, fly out of Chicago Thursday night. And then we'll be there Friday for the game and then come back to Chicago Saturday, drive back here on Sunday, and then we'll leave for New York.
Nice.
So that'll be fun. That's a really, you know, I've been watching their program my whole life, and, you know, that's my role model, him and my grandpa. And getting to see them make this championship run has been something special, you know. I'm a strong believer in everything that he stands in. Obviously, growing up in that program and seeing them have the year they've had has been pretty awesome for me.
So that's young Peyton Thorne, who's playing for Michigan State. Just imagine that. You grow up, right? Your dad's a head football coach. Most, I would think, in that situation. Your dad's your hero, right? Here he is coaching, and then eventually he's going to pass it on to you, and then you take it all the way to the next level to the point that you win the national championship, and all of a sudden all the news coverage is out. You're getting attention that you never thought you would get. Kids that are not on scholarship, who are paying the regular rate of any other student to go to school, and they're going out. That's something that doesn't happen every day. And there's a video, if you go out there on the Tribune website, where they're all on the field and they're chanting, "I am a national champion." I was sitting there in the closet watching it, getting ready for the show with maybe a little tear or two. And I know we have some people in this WGN land who played some D2 or D3 football. D3, our guy Brett Jackson played for Wheaton College. So for every and which is the same conference, by the way. So for anyone who's ever played on that level, or for those who have announced on the D2 level, yours truly, St. Edward's University, go Hilltoppers, Austin, Texas. You appreciate how much talent these kids have and how much they put into it. And yes, you don't have 100,000 people in the stadium. You don't have 20,000 people in the stadium. But none of that really matters at the end of the day. Still an incredible experience. So congratulations to North Central, getting it done. Beating Wisconsin Whitewater, 41-14. News coming up, 720 WGN. WGN, 6 o'clock hour, 6:10. Blackhawks hockey coming up at 7:30. The Blackhawks on the road playing the Colorado Avalanche. My name is Mark Carmen. Brandon Saad will not be playing tonight, nor will he be playing for a little bit here. Significant ankle injury, going to miss a couple weeks. The Hawks putting Saad on the injured reserve list, which that is not what you were looking for the Blackhawks, who are still trying to find their footing, so to speak, here. We'll see what they can do tonight with the Avalanche. Again, Chris Bowden with your pregame at 7:30. The Bulls are about to get underway in Detroit, or just starting right now. That means they're playing Derrick Rose, but D-Rose, my guy, and I know somebody's going to smile when I say this, and I don't like it that you are, but D-Rose is out tonight with left knee soreness, will not be playing. Curtis starts laughing. Executive producer Curtis Koch just flat out laughing that Derrick Rose has left knee soreness. It's my guy, D-Rose. He's having a great year, or a very good one, but will not be playing tonight as the Bulls are trying to get a win. I just one bit on Bulls basketball right now. It sounds like there's going to be some major changes going on with the Bulls coming up at the end of the year. I don't think John Paxson's going anywhere, but you see less and less butts in the seats at the United Center. That's not great, and it is kind of amazing. The year is 2019. Michael Jordan retired in 1998. So that is 21 years now. Retired from the Bulls in 98, came back with the Wizards. We all get it. But left the United Center wearing a Bulls uniform in 98. So 21 years. And the incredible halo/bloom, or whatever you want to call it, that Jordan gave the franchise, as far as people just coming out to the UC to see the Bulls no matter what. Tim Floyd coaching the team, Rusty LaRue running around, to the latest version of Zach LaVine and Lauri Markkanen and Chris Dunn, to players that most fans have no idea who they are, don't care. Not good enough to entertain you. Finally, there is some apathy going on. So it seems to me that perhaps there'll be a move with Gar Forman, and one with the head coach, Jim Boylan, who I've met Jim Boylan a bunch of times, drives by where I have coffee in the morning, super nice guy. Go out and see him when I'm covering games. I enjoy Jim Boylan. And I don't think if you had Red Auerbach or Phil Jackson or whoever you want to pick, the Bulls would be challenging for an NBA championship this year, and probably not even a playoff team. But I also see a guy that's seemingly out over his skis, just a drop there. So, you know, I mentioned if you started listening all the way back in White Sox Weekly, Juwan Howard's name as a potential head coach of your Chicago Bulls. Somebody in that seat who's going to bring some juice, who perhaps will help bring players here. That doesn't necessarily make a huge difference. Like, look, LeBron goes out and plays for the Lakers. They didn't even have a head coach. I mean, Frank Vogel, right, becomes their head coach this year. So he went out to play with Luke Walton. That was not the, he didn't go to play with Luke. He went because he wanted to play for the Lakers. And he thought that they would have a great chance of winning, and he wanted to be in Hollywood and wear that uniform, all that. So, you bring in a big-name head coach, I don't think that necessarily means the Bulls are going to get a ton of great players. But it would give some juice and some excitement and maybe a little bit of direction. And a good, young general manager with some progressive vision of where the organization is going, that might be something that you'll see happen with them after the season. All right, coming on back here, Jim Rebant has been the Bears public address announcer since the late 70s. Tomorrow is his final game. We're going to play a little snippet of my conversation with Jim coming on back here, who's a class act and one of Chicago's very own voices, if you will. That is next on 720 WGN. Jim Rebant, there's a timeout. Where? On the field. His final game as the Bears public address announcer coming up tomorrow night on the lakefront. Of course, the Bears finishing up their season on the road at Minnesota and won't be in the playoffs. We just lost Tommy Edwards over at the Bulls. Gene Honda, don't go anywhere, man. We can't be losing all these guys. But, Jim, you are retiring. Let's get a little conversation with him. And can you remind us when this whole thing started, please?
I started my PA career with the DePaul Blue Demons men's basketball team in the 77-78 season. And that year they went to the Elite Eight and lost to Notre Dame when Dave Corzine was injured. So the next year, Mark Aguirre came along, and they made it to the Final Four and lost to Larry Bird, which set up the game that gave college basketball a boost beyond all others, the Indiana State-Michigan State game. So at the end of that season, a friend of mine who was one of my clients was a car dealer who had, like many car dealers, a relationship with the Bears. In exchange for tickets, they would lend a car to a coach or a member of the staff. And his guy was Jim Finks, the Bears general manager. So at this gentleman's suggestion, I wrote a blithe letter to Jim Finks saying, I don't know if you're looking to replace the PA man, but in my last 2 years here at DePaul, they're 28-0, and they made the Final Four. Well, as luck would have it, I received a letter from Ted Harris, who was the Bears' pro equivalent of a sports information director, and he said, we're not looking to replace our PA guy, who was Chet Kopic, but we are looking to have a backup. And so the start of the journey was initiated by writing a letter.
I forgot that Chet Kopic was the public address announcer for the Chicago Bears. I think Chet Kopic might come back from the grave right now and hit me over the head for saying that. Love you, Chet. But that's a good memory right there, that Chester had that spot. And then, so you learned a little bit, or at least hung around Chet, I guess. Although maybe when you're the backup, you don't necessarily hang with him, but that you had to. I mean, Chet was in that press box for years, so you two had to have developed a relationship.
For sure. And Chet, he was fine with me. There were two spotters in the booth, and there was room for me to stand. So I stood behind Chet in that first year, and I learned a lot. He had a sense of the game. He had terrific timing. He was a little bombastic at times, which lent a little local color, and he had the classic Chicago voice, you know, the Bears, that staccato, rhythmical approach. And he was very entertaining, and he was an infectious kind of guy. And when I was lucky enough to start full-time in 82, part of the concept of what I did was an offshoot of sitting behind Chet.
And Chet left because the Bears wanted you or because he was doing more TV at the time?
He was used to commute in 79. He was a sports anchor on WISH TV in Indianapolis. And he had famous run-ins with Bob Knight. And Chet would drive on the game days all the way from Indianapolis to Chicago to do the game and then would leave thereafter. And he was pretty well assured of getting a job up in Chicago. At the end of the 79 season, he hooked up on WMAQ-TV. In the meantime, there was another gentleman who the Bears were looking at who moved in to do the games in 80-81. His name was Lynn Thornton, and he had worked out of South Bend and had a relationship with Ted Harris, the Bears sports guy from his Notre Dame days. When Lynn couldn't do it, I got a call in the spring of 82 from Bill McGrain, who was Jim Finks' right-hand man, and said, literally, kid, you got the chance, don't blow it. And my first regular season game was against the New Orleans Saints. And if you recall, that was the first of two major strike seasons in the NFL, 82 and 87.
Yeah.
And there was, before the game, the Bears had lost the road opener to the Lions. And after the national anthem, there was a solidarity handshake between the New Orleans Saints and the Bears. And Coach Ditka went ballistic on the sidelines because he didn't think it was appropriate to shake hands before a game, especially for the reasons, etc. So instead of having a full slate of eight games, there was the strike the day after the game, and I only got to do three games the first year. But I got to tell you, the interest and the excitement and the momentum of, you know, sitting in the booth for three seasons and then getting that call, and, you know, as Wayne Larrabee used to say, the dream became reality.
You named a bunch of stuff there, Jim. I want to go back to, first off, just about the timing. I think one of the keys to being a good PA guy, and, you know, I tried my hand at it at Northern Illinois back in 99, 2000. They let me do some Northern Illinois football and volleyball and a little bit of basketball. But you have to know the game. You have to feel it. There's a pacing to it that's essential. And that's why I think you got that, which was clearly why Bears fans love you. And Tommy Edwards, who just retired from the Bulls, certainly had that. Harvey Wittenberg over the Blackhawks had it big time. There's just something to it, just where you really just know, you have to know the game, feel it, and it's almost like you're a fan in the seat, right?
Well, that's the one thing that I always wanted to connote without going over the line, that above all, I was a Bears fan. And the ups and downs of the game and the inflection in my voice. When I first started, Jim Finks, the Bears general manager, took me aside. His booth was right next to the PA booth. We were in a Quonset hut, literally, on top of the old press box at Soldier Field. And he said, always remember, keep respect to the visiting team. Do what you can to be what you think you should be, but never be disrespectful to the other team. But then the footnote was, I don't want you using the first names of any of the Bears players. And that was sort of perplexing to me. And I didn't know if maybe he thought the running backs would get first names, but the tacklers wouldn't. And he wanted to keep everyone on the same plane. I really don't know. But he left a couple years after I started. Then on my own, I start using first names. But like you said, you really have to understand the ebb and flow of the game. And at certain points, certain plays are more important than others. And to get the crowd into the game, you feel it. And as I mentioned, Chet had that infectious way where you just know, you give it a little extra or a little different intonation in your voice, or a different inflection. And I think you sort of, without, this is not meant to be boastful, You sort of either have it or you don't. I don't think you can learn it. You just have to feel it.
Yeah.
And it's part of you.
Third, you know? And one. Like, there's,
that's right.
You know?
That's right.
Come on, man.
Yeah.
Huge damn play.
Right. That, Greg Miller, who was the producer next to me before the current producer, Letitia Wade, he was always nervous that I would go over the top, you know, with that third and one. There's some strict rules about when a PA announcer can talk when the visiting team has the ball. And if you know, going to the games, no music can be played when the play clock is down to 20 seconds, and I can't give any type of influence when the play clock is below 20, but I can give just the down and distance up until 15 seconds. And the game that sticks out was the 2013 last game when Rodgers hit Cobb, when Chris Conte thought they were in zone coverage, they were in man.
Ouch.
And we lost the chance to go to the playoffs, and I must have said it's fourth and eight like 11 times. You know, fourth and eight. And Miller finally, God bless Greg, said, would you just relax? But you knew, I mean, we're down to one play to beat the Packers to advance to the playoffs. And sure enough, you know, God bless Chris Conte, but Cobb was, there was nobody within 20 yards of him, which was just amazing.
And that moment, too, Rodgers pass complete to Cobb.
Yeah. Aaron Rodgers, Cobb, 28 yards and the Packer touchdown. Yeah, I'm like, Jesus.
I want to kill myself.
Right. Yes. Up until a few years ago, I used to give the preliminary signal on the penalties. Because if you watch, you can see the officials communicating either with hands or gestures what the call is before the referee gives it. So if there was a holding call against the other team and I saw the signal, preliminary signal, holding against the Lions, and the crowd would go crazy. Well, the NFL officials didn't like me usurping them. So that was a rule put in that PA announcers can't give the preliminary signal.
You changed the rules, Jim Riemann, Bears public address announcer with us here on 720 WGN as we celebrate one of Chicago's voices, and it's great to have you. But that's interesting. You actually made them change the rules because you were getting the crowd involved and the officials didn't want to. Maybe if that preliminary signal is wrong, then they're going to start booing and we could have a riot on our hands.
Yeah, thankfully, the preliminary signal at times, if it was a holding against the Bears, I wouldn't necessarily give the preliminary signal. Yeah, there's also at times when it's really a close call, and I would say, you know, stop short of the first down, and they call for a measurement, or I think it's a first down for the Bears, and the referees still call out the chain game. A couple times I had called the Bears first down, and Jeff Triplett, who was he's a big character, a big personality, referee called out for the chain gang. He put the stick down, and it was a first down, and I made the comment, and it's still a first down. So I was living on the edge there.
That, yes.
You know, yeah, but it added some local color. It was all in good nature fun. You know, it wasn't being disrespectful, but. You gotta have fun in the PA. You really do.
Jim Riebant, a Chicago treasure in the public address announcing booth, retiring tomorrow from the Bears, at least, as it'll be his last game at Soldier Field. Quick timeout, 720 WGN. WGN games going final in the NFL right now. For the 11th consecutive year, the New England Patriots are going to be the champions of the AFC East as they
beat the Buffalo Bills 24-17. The Bills did everything they could. They had the lead late, but Tom Brady was Tom Brady. And then, more importantly, that Patriots defense just kept the Bills out of the end zone. So New England is 12-3 as the Bills go down to 10-5, 24-17. That game just going final right now, which has absolutely zero impact on the Chicago Bears, of course, who are officially out of the playoffs. Bears and Chiefs tomorrow. That game was of interest to Kansas City, who was hopefully trying to get a chance to have a home game, but that's not going to happen as New England able to get their 12th win on the year. We're going to talk to Carrington Harrison from down in Kansas City coming up here in a little bit, covering the Chiefs, and just get his take on the head coach, Matt Nagy, what it was like in Kansas City as a play caller and what he's seeing with how the Bears are looking right now. So Carrington's coming up in just a little bit here. I thought some interesting notes from this week in Bears football. You know, you had three guys going to the Pro Bowl, and Khalil Mack was one of those guys. Khalil Mack was incredibly awesome last year. He was incredible. This year, Akeem Hicks got hurt, and Khalil Mack got double and triple and quadruple teamed, and the production was just not the same. Now, you can't expect a guy to perform at that level when you've got the entire offensive or offensive line trying to keep him off the quarterback. And unfortunately for the Bears, nobody else stepped up. But they asked him, you know, or tried to talk to him this week, "Hey, Khalil, sweet job making the Pro Bowl. You and Cordarrelle Patterson, who had a great job or did a great job on special teams, and safety Eddie Jackson, the three of you are all going back." And he wouldn't even have the conversation with the media. Yeah, no. What about going to the Pro Bowl? Not talking about that. But this is the fifth straight year that you're going. You had 7.5 sacks. You hit the quarterback 13.5. No, I'm not happy about it. I'm not, despite the fact that I've got name recognition and I'm being honored, I have no interest in talking about myself. We're not going to the playoffs. I didn't play up to my own expectations. The season's been an enormous disappointment for me, personally and for the team. I don't want to talk about it. I kind of appreciated that. I mean, he didn't say all that I just said there. I'm interpreting that this is why he was unwilling to really go into any conversation about going to the Pro Bowl. But reading between the lines, I didn't have a good year. Don't really feel like I belong there. And I can't even lean on the team. Like, they carried me to the Pro Bowl because we didn't have a good year. So despite the fact that I have mad respect around the game and I got, you know, I'm being selected once again, I'm not going to give myself any love there. So regardless, I guess minor congratulations to Khalil Mack going to the Pro Bowl 5 times in a row. That's nothing to sneeze at. Cordarrelle Patterson's been a great story. And if you listen to Hample, B, and Kaz, by the way, we'll be on tomorrow. 5 to 7 is our pregame show, and then after the game until midnight, around 10:30, till midnight tomorrow night. OB has been all over Cordarrelle Patterson all season long. Put that guy in a tight end. Give him the football. Put him in the backfield. Let him run with it. They didn't quite do that a whole lot. It's starting to come a little bit lately. Had a catch for 34 yards 2 weeks ago. That was sweet. And I'm with OB. This guy's got some serious talent. And the NFL is clearly honoring it, sending Cordarrelle to the Pro Bowl. So congratulations to him. And Eddie Jackson going, I didn't think Eddie Jackson had that great of a year. I really didn't. But maybe there's some nuance there that I'm missing. So going for now the second time. The talent is still there on this squad, certainly at least on the defensive side of the ball, and Cordarrelle's been a nice improvement. But if you remember last year, Mitchell Trubisky went to the Pro Bowl as an alternate. How many guys would have to get hurt this year for him to go? It would be more than it was last year, let's just say that. So I think the Bears are going to play with a lot of pride tomorrow. And whether it was a noon game or even on the big stage, Sunday Night Football, everyone's watching. I think they'll come out there a lot and give it their best. Interesting comments from Matt Nagy this week, though. Are you going to do things exactly the same now that you're eliminated? Yes, we're going to treat it exactly the same. I don't know if he's lying or if he's just off in his thinking. It's one of the two. You have an injured guy in Akeem Hicks who missed 8 games battling an elbow injury. Why would you put him in harm's way in a game that means nothing? Now, he's practiced all week. They don't hit like they used to, certainly, in practice. So I'm sure he was out of harm's way. But he's practiced all week. And it seems to me, reading his comments, that he doesn't really want to play. Quote, "It's just making sure that I do the right thing for my body and making sure that I don't go out there and hurt myself more. I'm sure that's on the mind of my coaches and GM. So we're handling the situation the best we know how. And it's a battle between making sure a guy can go out there and compete and making sure that a guy is healthy." That's Akeem Hicks talking. I would love one time for just a dude to be straight honest. "Hey, man, I really, really love the game of football. I want to be out there for my teammates, but unfortunately, we're out of it right now, and I've got to think about 2020. I've got to think about being as healthy as I can. And if I get dinged up in one of these last two games and I got to go through a whole bunch more rehab to make myself right, that's not good for me. That's not good for the team." So if I'm the head coach, by the way, I'm saying, look, Akeem really wants to be out there. There's nothing more that he wants to do in life than put on that uniform, play for himself and play for his teammates, play for the city, play for the organization. But we do have to protect the player from themselves. And we also have to think about the long-term best interest of the Chicago Bears. So Akeem is not going to play. And by the way, I'm also sitting down with my quarterback, my guy, Mitchell Trubisky, who I still believe in as we wrap up year 3 going into year 4. And I'm looking in the mirror at some ways that I didn't think that I put Mitch and the team in the best position to win, and I've learned from it. And I'm going to get with Mitch in these last 2 weeks, and we're going to try out some things, perhaps, that we haven't done all season long to get him even more comfortable going into the offseason. And I'm going to step out of my comfort zone and sort of get used to maybe not running the exact playbook that I'm used to running, because we have a quarterback who, quite frankly, might be more successful doing some other things. You don't have to throw him under the bus and say, if he was a good quarterback, he'd be able to run my system. You don't have to say that, right? Just say, we're going to try to figure out some ways to maximize Mitch's talent. Something along those lines. So, 312-981-7200. Let's do a quick timeout. We'll get an update from Kansas City here, and a ton of texts coming in today, too, that I want to get to. And Joey Meyer coming up right after 7 o'clock. Former head coach of DePaul, of course, doing color alongside the great Dave Ennett for tonight's game. The Cats and the Blue Demons on AM 1000 tonight, on AM 1000. So that's coming up over there. Their pregame is at 7:15, tip-off at 7:30. Blackhawks hockey coming up right here at 7:30. Chris Bowden has your pregame, the Hawks and the Avalanche at 8 on 720 WGN. 720 WGN, Mark Harmon with you till 7:30. Joey Meyer coming up after the hour. And I also want to find out if I should be, quote, the husband of the year. 3 weeks into marriage, I thought my performance on the honeymoon was worthy of some level of award. And just for the record, you know, we get down there, beautiful Jamaica, outstanding resort. But we get in the first room, and my beautiful wife was able to ascertain, detect, there were a couple of ants in the bathroom. Just a couple. You know, you're in Jamaica. These things happen. But she was like, hey, this is our honeymoon. I can't have ants in the room. I said, no problem. Let's move to another room. Let's have a even more romantic room. Let's go to room 2. So we went to the front, you know, went to management. They were like, hey, we've got this beautiful room we'd like to upgrade you into, but it's not available for yet another day. Would you be willing to move to this not as amazing room for just one night? And I said, no problem. Let's move to the not quite as amazing room for one night. We'll spend the night there. We'll unpack just a little bit, get the old toiletries out. No problem. We'll pack it back up the next day and we'll move along to room three. Okay, now, so now we've been in room one, had a little couple of ants. We were there for 28 minutes. Then we moved to room two for a night. Had that experience. Wonderful room. Could have stayed there the whole time. No problem. We'll move on to room three. We go to room three. Great room. Beautiful room. There's the ocean. Wet bars fully stocked. Beds comfortable. But then about night four on the trip, I wake up. I got a bunch of what I was 100% certain were mosquito bites on the old leg. But my beautiful wife, she was like, those could be bed bugs. I'm like, no. They're not. Trust me, they're not. This place doesn't have those. But she was adamant that they were. And I said, no, they're really not. But if you'd like to move rooms again, I will. I want to be husband of the year. Let's go. Because if you don't feel comfortable in here, if you're not comfortable, I'm not comfortable. So after the resort brought in the bug detector extraordinaire from Bug Detector Central in Jamaica, he came on in, inspected the room. They didn't find anything. No problem, though. Let's pack everything up, and let's go to our last room for the final two nights, and let's really appreciate the final room. So we were there for eight nights. I spent time in four different rooms. And I don't think I complained more than 17 times that this was going on. So, I mean, I think I'm husband of the year 3 weeks in here. Right? I mean, four rooms in eight nights. Who else has ever done that in the history of vacation? I mean, I pulled that off. I think I should, you know, get something for that situation. Is my guy ready here? He is? All right. Let's see if Carrington Harrison, who I used to do radio with down in Kansas City when I worked there. I don't know if you ever knew I worked in Kansas City. He knows Matt Nagy and the Chiefs very well. The Bears, of course, are playing them tomorrow night. C-Dot, did you hear any of that? My husband of the year?
Carm, you, Danny, and Nick are the only radio hosts in the country that I would have sat through and listened to that entire story without hanging up and then your producer calling me back. You were the only three. I swear to you, if this was anybody else, I would have just hung up the phone and I'd have been like, don't call me back whenever he's ready to talk to me.
Well, but you were busy. You were wrapping up a show.
No, I've been ready for you. The moment I answered the phone, I was like, I'm ready. I listened to your story. No, you did play it correctly. I'll give you that. I understand you're on your honeymoon. Like, if that was a regular vacation, you can probably tell her to relax. But on the honeymoon, you got to go above and beyond. You can't tell her no. So I understand why you did what you did, but. Let's say that next year you guys go and you got to go through all that. At some point, you guys are like, I mean, it's not that big of a deal. Come on.
See, that conversation may have happened as well. I might have omitted that part from the whole situation. but I do like your take. Next time, like, I can invoke, like, look, we did that on the honeymoon situation. I went along with it. But right now, we got to chill.
No, I completely understand. No, Carm. Right. Carm, you know I'm on your side 100%. Whatever you do, you know I support you. So I get in this scenario. That's what you had to do. I was ready to make a joke of that's how I know that the Bears aren't very good because you're going through extended hotel stories. Like in Kansas City, you do that. The text line's blowing up. Talk Chiefs. I don't care about this. In Chicago, when it's Christmas and your team's not going anywhere except to the 14th pick in the NFL draft, you can tell these kind of stories.
Well, see, and that's where and we don't even have the 14th pick because we traded Khalil Mack. So we don't.
Oh, yeah, because you gave it away.
We don't have that option. I brought up at the start of the show, like, do you want the Bears to win or lose here? Because you got the 8-6 Steelers and the 6-8 Browns and the Bucks are 7-8 and the Eagles and the Cowboys and the Raiders. They're all right there, right? So you could finish up. You could finish up 13th, have that pick, or you could be 22. And I'm like, oh no, they don't even have the pick. That's all. Second round. You want to pick higher in the second round?
This season,
But the thing about the Bears is, and I obviously don't know the market in Chicago very well. Anybody who could neutrally look at this season knew exactly what was going to happen. The only people that thought the Bears had a chance live in Chicago. No one that lives outside of Chicago is surprised by what's happened to the Bears. We knew last year that the whole Mitch Trubisky experiment was very flimsy, and that was only going to work for one year. Every year in the NFL, we see a team that can run the ball well, that plays defense, that's just average at quarterback, win 10 games, and then the next season it then folds like a house of cards. Everybody knew this was going to happen except Bears fans. None of us are surprised that this is happening.
Yeah, and a lot of Bears fans aren't surprised either. And by the way, I don't know how I feel about you coming in as an outsider just telling Chicagoans that you knew damn well that they were
100%. Everybody knew this, though. like for example, Carm.
Yeah.
Buffalo is going to do the exact same thing next year. Buffalo, they are this year Chicago Bears. Like this year's quarterback's playing just well enough. They run the ball. They're well coached. They play good defense. Their coach might win Coach of the Year. And then next year they go 7-9. Like, everybody sees what this is going to happen with Buffalo. This happens every year. We all knew Chicago. Like, Chicago was number one on what team made the playoffs in the year before that's going to miss the next season. It was Chicago. Everybody knew.
And the over-under was, like, super tight. Like, how could it only be 9? Well, you know.
Yeah, of course.
You got to listen to Vegas. All right, I got 2 minutes because I went too long on this story, but I want you to sum up. When Matt Nagy came here, Carrington Harrison, 610 Sports Radio, covering the Chiefs in Kansas City, does afternoons. Did you think that the Bears were getting a stud head coach, or who knew how to run an offense, or did you think we were getting somebody who had one way to run an offense, and if Mitchell Trubisky wasn't going to fit into that, he was going to have a whole lot of problems?
I'm not going to lie to you. It just wasn't really that big of a deal in Kansas City because I think that Andy Reid is the one calling the plays. Like, Andy Reid is the constant. I just feel like Reid creates guys like Matt Nagy all the time. Like, right now, their offensive coordinator, Eric Bieniemy. Eric Bieniemy could have been the head coach at Colorado. That's where his alma mater is. He could be the head coach in the NFL. Like, Eric Bieniemy can be a head coach in the NFL whenever he wants because he's been the offensive coordinator for Andy Reid. Like, being the offensive coordinator for Andy Reid is kind of like working under Bill Belichick. Like, as long as you don't mess it up, you will get a head coaching job at some point. So I like Matt Nagy. I think he makes a lot of sense, but I don't really know if it resonated here in Kansas City because they just always turn over offensive coordinator. Doug Peterson, Matt Nagy, Eric Bieniemy is probably going to leave, and then Andy just finds the next one.
We got breaking news, C-Dot. Just so you know, different sport, but we're coming for you in the Kansas City Royals. The White Sox have signed Dallas Keuchel, my friend.
White's, oh, good move. I like that move.
The White Sox signing Dallas Keuchel. All right, I can't be late for news, so I love you, and let's talk soon, C-Dot. You're the man. I needed that Matt Nagy take out of you, so appreciate you.
Thanks, Carp.
All right, talk to you soon. Carrington Harrison, 610 Sports Radio. The White Sox making moves. Dallas Keuchel. Talk about it, 720 WGN. So breaking news, the Chicago White Sox have made their biggest signing of the offseason, without question. Yasmani Grandal's right there, but this is a over-the-top move by the White Sox as far as being all-in and being a playoff team in 2020. They have signed Dallas Keuchel, left-hander. His resume reads, he was an all-star in 2015 with the Houston Astros. He was an all-star again with the Astros in 2017. He won a World Series with the Houston Astros in 2017. He won the AL Cy Young Award in 2015 with the Houston Astros. He's a four-time Gold Glover. So you're getting a guy who not only has been successful on the mound, not only helps your defense, you're also getting a guy who is a veteran and can help lead this young White Sox team at 31 years old. Now, what's the contract, right? How much money are you paying him? 3-year deal worth $54 to $56 million a year. And now there's an option for a fourth year as well. Okay? So, and news is coming in fast here on this. But 3 years, $54 to $56 million. So doing the math on that,
you're looking at roughly $18 million a year for 3 years for Dallas Keuchel, which is the price of tea in China right now. That's just what it's going to cost. Last year, he pitched for the Atlanta Braves. Now, he had a draft pick compensation attached to him, so nobody signed him in the offseason. Teams did not want to pay him big money and give up a first-round draft pick. So he sat there and didn't sign with the Braves until didn't pitch for the Braves until late in June. June the 21st was his first outing. So a very odd start to the year. It's the same thing that happened with Craig Kimbrell, who was closing for the Cubs last year. So he starts pitching in June. His first start's a little rough, five innings, eight hits, three runs. He's got an ERA of 5.06 after a couple of starts in June. Then it goes to 3.5 in six July starts, 3.5 in six August starts, and 3.86 in September, and he started two playoff games. 4 2/3, 5 hits, 1 run against the Cardinals at home, and then 3 1/3, 3 runs against the Cardinals on the road. Both those games, the Braves ended up losing. St. Louis won that series. So that's the most recent work of Dallas Keuchel. But the White Sox have now added Gio Gonzalez, right? They've added Yasmani Grandal. They've added Nomar Mazara to play right field. And they've added Dallas Keuchel. Let's think about this. You've got Keuchel is, let's call him a number 2-3 starter, right? He's not a clear-cut one. But hopefully your one emerges from Lucas Giolito, Michael Kopech, Dylan Cease, Ronaldo Lopez. And regardless if not a true one emerges, every fifth day I'm throwing out Giolito, I'm throwing Keuchel, I'm throwing Lopez, I'm throwing Gio, I'm throwing Kopech, I'm throwing Cease. You got to start feeling good about that rotation, right? You're going to have Luis Robert playing center field real early in the season, who's going to help you hopefully at the plate and certainly defensively. You're going to have Eloy coming in off a ridiculous rookie season, hitting 30 bombs. You're going to have Tim Anderson coming off a batting title playing shortstop. You're going to see Nick Madrigal at second base, who was tearing it up in the minors this year, rising from high A all the way to triple A. Struck out like 3 times all season long. You've got Abreu re-signed to play first base and DH. Yoan Moncada's working out like a maniac in the Dominican trying to get his body right. You're better behind the plate. White Sox are going to be a sexy pick in 2020, flat out. People are going to pick the White Sox to win the AL Central. You did not make a move in your bullpen last year, right? A lot of people thought that, you know, hey, me right here, Mark Harmon, I'm thinking, you know, I don't really know if you're winning in 2020. Why not trade one of what was one of your valuable pieces in Alex Colome, your closer? 30 saves last year, 61 innings, 42 hits. I thought somebody would pay up for him at the deadline. White Sox didn't do it. They wanted to have him for 2020. They knew that they were going to be aggressive in the offseason. They tried to sign Zach Wheeler with a $125 million deal. They didn't get him. So rather than sitting it out, they pivoted, and now they have inked Dallas Keuchel. You know, we tried to get Rick Hahn on the show for White Sox Weekly earlier today. Didn't work out. He wanted to wait a little bit. Perhaps he was a little busy. All right. Vinny Duber covers the White Sox. NBC Sports Chicago. Going to join us next. 720 WGN. White Sox all in on 2020, seemingly at least here. Dallas Keuchel, 3-year deal, $55.5 million, according to John Heyman, with a fourth year, a vesting fourth year that could take it to 4 years and $74 million. Vinny Duber covers the White Sox for your NBC Sports Chicago, and he joins us now on 720 WGN. Vinny, you knew at 7:17 on December whatever it is that you'd be talking to me about a Dallas Keuchel signing and writing something that you're about to put on out into the old world. This is Sox were around this, but I don't think anybody really thought it was going to happen. But now it has. What are your thoughts?
I mean, obviously, it's a great move for them. You know, they get some reliability in that starting rotation, some veteran dependability at the top there. So many questions, obviously, with the young guys, and they have high hopes. But, I mean, to get a guy who's been a Cy Young winner, who's been a World Series champion, this is kind of exactly what people expected, I think, when the Sox started this search for starting pitching this offseason. They expected this big name like this with a big resume. And then, you know, when Zach Wheeler said no, when some of the other guys started going to other teams, I think people started freaking out a bit. And Keuchel was still out there, and we had two, I think, national guys on the podcast when we were at the winter meetings predict that Keuchel would end up on the White Sox, and here you go.
Oh, there it is. So he gets 3 years, call it $55 million. He was with Atlanta, right? So the Braves went out and signed Cole Hamels for 1 year and 18. Do you read anything into that, that, you know, hey, here he is, he's in Atlanta, seemingly could have, would have stayed there if they wanted to make that offer, and they didn't, that they preferred old man Cole Hamels on a one-year deal?
I think that probably has more to do with the fact that Cole Hamels is 1 year, right? I mean, they're kind of probably looking for just a guy to add in the short term, whereas Keuchel, deservingly so, gets a long-term contract with the White Sox. I think the age probably, it might be a little surprising maybe that Keuchel ends up with 3 years, maybe a four-year deal here on the South Side, just because he's going to turn 32 here on New Year's Day. But I think for the resume, he pitched well with the Braves last year, pitching only half a season after the extended free agency last year. So I think it's a really good move for the White Sox. I wouldn't read into it the Braves preferring Cole Hamels over him. I think that was probably them preferring a guy in a one-year deal over a multi-year deal.
So I'm sending a bunch of texts around here, Vinny, to people in the know, my baseball folks out there. One guy who knows him well writing me, I don't see Keuchel as a mentor for young guys. Not a bad influence, but he does his own thing. When you were out at the winter meetings, did you hear anything along those lines?
I heard kind of the opposite, to be honest. I think a few of the guys, like I mentioned, a few of the guys who were talking to us about, you know, predicting that he would kind of end up here were saying kind of the opposite, that he would be a really great clubhouse presence, that he's a guy that could kind of help some of these young arms along. I think Rick Hahn also mentioned that they hope that Lucas Giolito already has some of those mentorship qualities, even though he's a younger guy, that he's kind of developing into that kind of pitcher, and he might be able to help out, you know, the Michael Kopechs and the Dane Dunnings and the Dylan Ceases of the world when those guys come along, if that is necessary. So I think they probably like what Keuchel brings from an on-field standpoint. Obviously, I've heard good things about him in the clubhouse, but I think they're also happy with kind of the guys that they already have there in the clubhouse being able to play that kind of role also.
You picking the White Sox to win the division, Vinny?
I don't know. Probably not quite yet. We're going to have to wait and see how it shakes out. Obviously, there could be a big move involving the Cleveland Indians. You know, if you listen to the rumor mill a lot, but obviously the White Sox are much improved over where they were just a couple of months ago. I mean, heck, where they were just a month ago, right? I mean, they signed Yasmani Grandal, who has really kind of flown under the radar because the signing happened so early. I mean, this guy is one of the best position players on the market this winter, and the White Sox snapped him up right away, and then everybody was expecting so much more that I think they forgot how good that signing was in the first place. So you add an everyday catcher, an all-star catcher, you add an all-star pitcher, a Cy Young pitcher to the top of your rotation. This is a much-improved roster. You got Luis Robert coming up. You got Nick Madrigal coming up at some point. So you're looking at a lot of new everyday guys, a lot of new top-of-the-depth-chart kind of guys. And I think it's really exciting. If you're a White Sox fan, you should probably be really excited of what Rick Hahn has been able to do here in this short amount of time, which is crazy to say after the way people were reacting during the winter meetings just a little bit ago.
Yeah, nobody's will take the White Sox's money. Like, look, I understand that Zach Wheeler didn't take the White Sox money, but if they're going to be at the top of the market, which seemingly they were for Keuchel, people are going to come here, and maybe they'll get some, you know, I don't know, as they move up the ladder here and become, you know, a winning club, maybe guys will start to give him a little bit of a discount to come play in Chicago. Who knows? But you didn't even mention Nomar Mazara, Vinny. You didn't even throw in a Gio Gonzalez. Look, I mean, you know, those guys are just afterthoughts at this point.
Well, Well, and that should speak to the work that they've done, right? That they've got Dallas Keuchel and Yasmani Grandal, and they also might have added an everyday right fielder and a new number three or four starting pitcher in there too, and they're not even the headline. So I think that speaks to kind of the remake of the roster that's going on there. Rick Hahn did say to, you know, hold off on judging the right field situation until the offseason's over. So Nomar Mazara could be the everyday guy, or he might be part of a mixture. We'll see when that rolls around, and we'll see how much Gio Gonzalez can give him. Obviously, they've got guys who aren't necessarily maybe going to be in that opening day rotation that could still end up contributing by the end of the year. So it could be a very interesting starting pitching mix by the time, you know, late July or August rolls around compared to what it looks like at the end of March.
All right, Vinny. We'll see you at the end of October at Guaranteed Rate Field, all right?
All right. What are we're going to stand out there? We're just going to go stand out there for no reason?
Listen, I think what's the date today? December the whatever?
21st.
The 21st. If you don't drink the Kool-Aid today, I mean, come on, man. They just signed Keuchel. Carmen was on the air in the moment. This is it's a sign. It's the world. We had Ed Farmer on the show tonight. We talked to Merck earlier today, Vinny. We got you on. I mean, this is a day. This is a moment. This is something to remember.
The planets are aligning.
Dallas Keuchel, longtime Astro, 19 games with the Atlanta Braves, wanting to continue his career and win his second World Series with the Chicago White Sox. I mean, everyone's been saying, like, give me a John Lester signing, which those stars are totally different, and Theo had that relationship, and I understand the White Sox and the Cubs are in the same city, that everybody wants that. You didn't really need that. But this is kind of sort of in the remote picture of that. It's a veteran guy coming here who will hopefully help you get over the top.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I mean, I think, you know, there might have been other guys on the market who might have fit that John Lester mold a little bit closer, but Dallas Keuchel fits it pretty well. And I think, obviously, it's all going to end up depending on how he performs. John Lester performed so well for the Cubs that it makes it look even that much more difficult to find. But if Dallas Keuchel pitches well, we could be talking about him in the same light.
Yeah, and they got him for $100 million less. So, you know, it's a lot of money, but in today's baseball, three-year deal, you know, at 18, I don't think they overpaid. I think that's, you know, it seems like a fair number, and one that won't completely stop them from doing other things as well. And you're into it for 3 years, and if he's great, 4 years. I get why Jerry Reinsdorf and company feel comfortable with it. I think it's a solid investment. Vinny, you're a solid investment, man. Thanks for taking time.
No problem. Thank you.
All right, Vinny Duber, NBC Sports Chicago. Sox fans, I don't have a lot of time here for a reaction. And I don't know if you're excited, but I think you should be. This is a solid, solid move. American Sales, known for having the largest selection of Christmas trees and decor. Right now, during the Christmas clearance event, you can save up to 75% on all Christmas. You find hundreds of quality Christmas trees ready to take home and thousands of unique decor items. Plus, you can save up to 60% on show-stopping gifts like hot tubs, pools, patio furniture, grills, and more. Get 0% financing for 4 years. See store for details. American Sale, for 60 years, helping you bring the fun home. Blackhawks hockey coming up in a matter of moments. And just a reminder, get real in the morning with Larry Potash, Robin Baumgarten, Paul Conrad, the entire WGN morning news team, weekdays 4 until 10. Dallas Keuchel is in the fold, 720 WGN.